program. Dave joins us on the local beat. It's brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Stop by to see Jim and Bob and the whole gang at Vandermark Jewelers. They're on Broad Street here in Elyria, right across from the hospital. Vandermark Jewelers is a trusted name in jewelry. If you stop by, you will see why. Dave, a pleasure as always to have you on the show, my friend. How are things in your neck of the woods?
Oh, they're going all right, Bull. It's been kind of a hectic week and a half here, but things have calmed down a little bit this afternoon, and ready to talk news.
Well, you have actually been in court quite a bit over the last week and change. You've actually been all over the Jacquez Ross trial, and you know, at the beginning of the day today, I was set to ask you about some of the latest developments, but we saw something come down the pipe here just a little while ago, and it seems like a verdict is in.
Yes, that is true. Lorain County Common Pleas jury took about just about 9 hours over the past 2 days of deliberations to find Jacquez Ross guilty of 11 of 13 felony charges in the 2016 murders of Michael Lewis and Fanning Thomas Lewis. January 2016, they were found shot to death in a rental car up on Fox Hill Lane, and it was a high-profile crime. And it took a little bit longer, about a year, before Jacquez Ross was arrested for that. Elyria Police did the investigation, and today the jury came back with findings of guilty. So Mr. Ross has had his bond revoked, and he will be sitting in the Lorain County Jail until September 8th, when the sentencing phase takes place. In this case, which is a death penalty case, he is potentially facing a death penalty for being convicted of aggravated murder.
So based on all that you have heard, and I know that you've written a lot about this over the last week, were you surprised at all at the decision that was made today?
You know, it was an interesting case, Bull, because there's sort of that thing that they started talking about a few years ago called the CSI effect. The CSI effect basically is that juries nowadays really want to see DNA, fingerprint evidence, ballistics evidence. You know, they want to see all the flash cuts, you know, and the fancy stuff that from that old CBS series that was on for a few years and spawned a couple spinoffs. And quite frankly, there wasn't much of that in this trial. There was an awful lot of cellular telephone records that police and prosecutors said put Mr. Ross at the scene, at or around the scene of the crime, at the time of the crime. And then there's also, some evidence that was given. Basically, he had talked to other people, kind of trying to get them to give him an alibi through, you know, calls from the jail and also letters that he sent out of the jail. And they were saying during the trial that, you know, Mr. Ross was big in calling people on the phone. He made thousands of phone calls. And so at one point there was presented a CD with about 16,000 pages of cellular telephone records. Obviously, if you were to stack that floor to ceiling, you know, that'd be really difficult to cart around the courtroom. But obviously, it was all kind of digitized. And so they had an FBI agent and some other folks from some of the wireless carriers, who were involved as being custodians of those records, come in and testify to where Mr. Ross's phones were. And basically, the defense argued that, look, there's no DNA, no fingerprints, no murder weapon, no bloody clothing, and no eyewitnesses to link Mr. Ross to this crime. It's an entirely circumstantial case that the police have, and we don't think you should convict our client. And the jury, saw it differently, and they did convict him on a majority of the charges. So as of starting September 8th, we're going to go to the sentencing phase. Should take a couple days, and then the jury will decide whether or not they think Mr. Ross should go to death row.
16,000 pages? Is that what you said?
That's what I said. 16,000 pages of cellular telephone records.
Holy smokes. So they've pinpointed that he was at least in the area where the crime took place, right?
Correct, yes.
Wow. Now, in reading one of your stories last week, it seemed like a girlfriend or an ex-girlfriend of his had also kind of leaked a little bit of information. I know that, you know, the story was there's a belief that maybe he either burned or in some way, shape, or form got rid of the clothing that he allegedly was wearing when he committed this crime. How much did that play a role in this?
Well, I think that was an interesting situation because again, the cellular telephone records put Mr. Ross in between Elyria and North Olmsted, where he was going. You know, he went later that night to go visit his sister who lives in North Olmsted, and Ross's ex-girlfriend Brooke Nolan, who did not testify, but because allegedly, you know, he had tried to manipulate her future testimony, you know, by talking to her on the phone and sending her letters from the jail and everything. When she declined to testify, you know, in front of the judge, the prosecution said, well, there's a legal standard called forfeiture by wrongdoing that says that we can use statements that she gave that might otherwise be called hearsay, which for the most part, hearsay statements are not allowed in court if they can't be verified in another way. Basically, they said there's an exemption to the hearsay rule that says if I say, you know, if Dave O'Brien tells Bull Barch, hey, don't say I stole that stick of gum or else I'm gonna beat you up, and you don't testify as a result, well, then if you had told the police previously that, hey, Dave O'Brien stole that stick of gum, then they could use that statement against me in court if it ever went to trial. So that kind of thing. So basically, Brooke Nolan made an awful lot of statements that then other witnesses or kind of secondhand or thirdhand witnesses came forward with additional information to police that verified what Brooke Nolan said took place, you know, in conversations and in actions and, you know, car rides and other ways that she interacted with Jacquez Ross, you know, almost immediately after the murders. So there was a lot of evidence that was given to police that was corroborated in other ways of what she said, even though she never took the stand.
Again, Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram joining us on the Local Beat, brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Dave, we're going to stay in court, but shift gears slightly here. You wrote a story, and this is going back about a week ago, discussing a panel appointed by the Ohio Supreme Court that recommended justices suspend a local attorney's law license for a couple of years for failing to adequately represent a client during the breakup of her marriage. So what all happened here?
So this is an interesting case as well, where an attorney by the name of Kenneth Lewis has received a recommendation that he get a 2-year suspension of his law license, and that had to go through, you know, it still has to be finalized by the Ohio Supreme Court by the 7 justices there, you know, having to sign off on it. But basically, Mr. Lewis is accused of representing a woman in Cuyahoga County Domestic Relations Court after receiving, you know, payment. She paid him $1,250 to help her dissolve her marriage. But then he failed to prepare documents, failed to file orders to divide up, you know, retirement benefits that she was entitled to, failed to do a number of things, so much so that she had to get another attorney to finish her with her, helping with her dissolution. You know, initially, you know, there was an agreement with the Lorain County Bar Association, which received the complaint that was rejected by the folks in, you know, at the Ohio Supreme Court's Board of Professional Conduct, and Mr. Lewis, you know, eventually paid back about $2,500 to the client, restitution for both what he initially took from her, as well as the cost of her having to get a new attorney. You know, and it's one of those kind of internal, you know, matters that, you know, that he violated some of the standards and codes of conduct that attorneys are supposed to follow. You know, when representing clients. It's also not the first time Mr. Lewis has been disciplined. In April 2009, he got a 1-year suspension out of Medina County for forging a judge's signature on a court document. Also, after being reinstated in 2010, 8 years after that, in May 2018, he was also suspended because he blamed a non-existent person on a car crash that happened while he and his girlfriend were headed home from the bar. Their car crashed into a utility pole, and he blamed somebody else had been, you know, had been driving, but that person actually didn't exist. So it appears also from court documents that Mr. Lewis has a bit of an alcohol issue, an ongoing alcohol issue. He's been in treatment. You know, he's had some other, you know, minor run-ins with the law. And he also, interestingly enough, told the board that, you know, he's been working for a family business. But he has not applied to be reinstated to practice law at this time. Whether or not he's actually working at the family business is an entire another matter, because family members have said that he has never and nor will he ever, you know, work in their family business. So we may be seeing some more some more news about this coming down the line.
Yeah, it seems like there are a lot of open chapters in that book. So very, very interesting. You weren't lying when you said at the beginning of that this is a very interesting case. I didn't realize that the more you peel back, the more you find with a story like this. I mean, forging a judge's signature? Whew, man. Yeah. Holy cow.
Layers of an onion, my friends. Layers of an onion.
Dave, how easily accessible is that information for people when they're looking around to select a lawyer for whatever it is they need? Is that kind of is that easy to find for those kind of people? Or is that kind of hidden? How easy is that to get to?
There is basically an online database where you can see, if you're planning to hire an attorney, you can see whether or not they've been suspended or whether or not they've been reprimanded by the Ohio Supreme Court in some way. I don't know about other states, as I've never been a reporter in other states, but Ohio has a very accessible database. If you go to the Ohio Supreme Court's website, you can find it there. And it's basically much like if you're going onto one of these private sites like Angie's List, or if you're looking for a contractor and you want to see that they're bonded, or whether or not that they have a good score with the Better Business Bureau, very much the same. You can go and see if a lawyer has had discipline in the past. And I've looked up such things as, everybody who's an attorney who's running for public office, in past elections, to people who appear in court, that I've never met before. And, it's a good resource for attorneys as well as the public, as well as journalists to go and see who exactly are you dealing with. And is this somebody that you'd be willing to hire? And it's all public record, public documents, and all signed off on by the court. So you can go and see if somebody's, sort of the right fit for you if you want representation.
Wow. Well, great insight as always, Dave. And before we let you go here, my friend, we can't end a local beat with Dave O'Brien without talking about a couple of scanner stories. So which scanner story stood out to you over the last 6 days?
Well, I got another good one from our bureau out in Boulder, Colorado. Again, my good friend Mitchell Byers heard over the scanner. Hashtag scanner for the win. Pretty sure I just heard a dispatcher say someone had a lightsaber and was on alcohol or drugs.
A lightsaber, huh? Okay, I saw you tweet something about Star Wars earlier today, and I guess this all kind of ties in with the exact same theme. So,
sort of tangentially related, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, so what kind of force was used there in that battle?
Ooh, well done. Yeah. Well done, sir. Way to sneak that one in there at the very end. Great stuff.
Oh, boy.
Well, Dave, as always, your time is tremendously appreciated, my friend, and we look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Sounds good, Bull. I'll be around.
Thank you, Dave. Again, that's Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram. Joining us on the local beat, it's brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. You can use the force when you walk into the showroom at Vandermark Jewelers, but you probably don't have to. Jim's a nice guy. He might give you a strange look, but then he'll laugh it off, and you guys will have a great conversation, I'm sure, for the next 20 minutes. And when you stop by Vandermark Jewelers, you'll see why I've been telling you for a few years now that they are a trusted name in jewelry. Stop by and see them in person here in Elyria on Broad Street, right across from the hospital. Visit them online as well at VandermarkJewelers.com. That's VandermarkJewelers.com. Let's take a break. More puns and lots of excitement with Rocco Nucci and me after this here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.